Attention, please.
Come on over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on. Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking. Whole lot of shaking going on. Well, I say, come on over, baby. We got chicken.
This is Attention, Please, in which each Monday at this time we will draw your attention to some of the enriching opportunities, events, and services on offer on this amazing peninsula we call home. This is KPTZ News Director Steve Evans, and this week we talk with someone who came to Port Townsend with visions of farming for a living, but who realized that fulfilling his dream would necessitate total involvement with the local economy.
I am talking today to Eric Peterson, who has been in Port Townsend for like 5 years now, and he is a man of many trades, but first was known to me actually as the proprietor, along with his wife, of Three Peas Farm, from whom we get our eggs, and good eggs they are. And I've just learned, Eric, that you grew up on a farm.
Yeah, that was my childhood as a kid. My first job, actually, at 4 years old, wake up in the morning and go feed a couple hundred chickens and pick a couple hundred eggs, bring them in, wash them, pack them up, and we would actually sell at the health food store back when you couldn't sell organic pasture-raised eggs in Safeway. They had no idea.
So it was like a sort of a niche market.
Yeah, back then it was definitely a niche. Right. Now, we have channels like the Co-op, and then we also have, all of the mainstream stores trying to follow in and participate too. And so it's way easier to find your customers now than it ever was for my parents, 40 years ago.
In a way, you were kind of like at the tail end of a vanishing breed, which is like, the family farmers. Family farms are pretty much gone. But what attracted me to a conversation with you is you and I met at a Housing Solutions Network get-together, and you were telling me about some of your reasons for moving to Port Townsend, what attracted you about this town. Yeah, so why don't you just like sort of repeat some of that to me?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is one of the few places, certainly in the state and maybe in the world, who knows, where you can find a mix of progressive values and social interest and a genuine support for an agrarian community, right? And people who want to make their livelihood from farming. There's a lot of places where you have kind of angry redneck and lots of support for farming, and there are lots of places that tout liberal values in discussion, and then it gets very NIMBY when you talk about, I might have to raise chickens and we may have roosters that make noise in the morning, or we may have compost. You may smell compost in the morning, and then suddenly it's like, well, no, go somewhere else. And here, I can be genuine in both respects, and they're not in tension, and there's just not a lot of places that you can do that.
There's a real concern also in Port Townsend, and has been for years, for like building local economies, mm-hmm. and there's like a real sort of like local food movement, and I know quite a few people who are really interested in the 100-mile diet. I mean, buying or eating anything. And I won't say that comprises anything like a majority or maybe even a significant minority in this town, but it's certainly a contingent here.
I think it's actually a pretty large group at all levels of adoption, right? And this is important to me, but I'm just trying to get started to people who are way ahead of my wife and I and really mentors for us, who've been doing it forever, right? And the food security is one that comes to mind right away, and it's very focal in our lives because it's an everyday thing. But it's really the tip of the iceberg, because you start to see what security looks like through a systems lens, and you look at all the different interdependent relationships, both on the business side and how they all support each other, the analog on the personal side, and what those relationships look like and how they make people feel more at ease. Even when we're in situations that are stressful, right, like socially stressful or even our life, right, like the last year. And it all fits together. And so when you start thinking about local food systems and you start to really try and participate in that, you also start to look at other systems of resilience and you start to see them all as one big protective web. Good comparison to that is like the availability of housing for the people who work the farms and produce the food for the people who live here and how those two are interrelated, right? And that became, as soon as we got here and we started farming, that became something that became very obviously you can't have one without the other. And so first it was a competitor for our attention, and then we realized actually we can do just as much good by putting some effort into that front at the same time. And so, you know, when we got this farm, we'd been looking around, and if it's just my wife and I, we live pretty simply. We've got one son. It's not a huge family. We would have been perfectly happy in a tiny little cabin with as much acreage as we can afford and just go, right? And as we got here, I started to rethink it. It's like, well, maybe we should look for the biggest home we can possibly afford. We wanted to do farming. We realized that in Port Townsend, that also means that we have to do some sort of affordable housing too. It's a need here. And so that interdependent relationship, you know, got us doing both. And looking at how they support each other, that also made me think, well, you know, how many other different ways can you invest in the community that are mutually supportive of each other? A lot of the old school farmers kind of warned us about, you know, like they keep your expenses low and your operating costs low and don't go buy some huge mansion on a ton of acreage. That's the, you know, that's how you go bankrupt as a farmer. You want a mobile home and you know.
So how many people are actually like living on the farm now?
Right now.
And how many acres do you have?
Yeah, so we have about 5 acres and it's an intensive system. So there's no tractors, no, you know, we're trying to minimize carbon footprint on the farm and then also, you know, maximizing the amount of value we get out of every square foot. And then people that live there, it's gotten really nebulous because we have a pretty open door and we get a lot of people who, you know, they want to come for a weekend and next thing you know, they've been living there for 3 months and getting along great with everybody. And we get a lot of people who, you know, they might have come for the wooden boat school or something like that and stayed for a month or two for a very purposeful reason. And then 3 years later, want to move back to Port Townsend and live here. And so at what point, you know, do they live here? And at what point are they just really, really good friends who I would have an open door to at any point, you know?
Right.
We've certainly had other people who have been there the whole time. And, you know, like they're basically family, right? I guess you would have to tell me the definition to live there for me to understand how to tell you how many people do that. But
well, maybe an average.
Right? Yeah, an average. I mean, we basically keep a full house, but not an overcrowded house. And so, you know, with 4 bedrooms and maybe 5 people or 6 people, you know, you got a couple couples in there and right. And something like that. At no point am I forcing anybody to trip over each other. And it's usually the opposite. It's like, you know, all getting together in the evening and playing music together and doing things that are really collaborative. So that nobody feels alone, right? And nobody feels overwhelmed by being alone.
Right.
And so, you know, one of the things we realized as we got into this is doing something like home share really well requires a deep commitment to cleanliness because it doesn't take much for things to get out of hand, especially if you have kids, right?
Right.
And a deep commitment to compassion because you have to genuinely care about each other. Otherwise, you know, you'll drive each other away. And then a willingness to collaborate. And so clean and compassionate and collaborative are all free, right? Like anybody can show up and make that work if they have those things. They don't need money to do that. And they don't necessarily even need a lot of education or anything else. It's just, you know, human skills. And so right now the vibe is fantastic. People are really working together on stuff. We're working on farm projects together. We're working on, like, you know, we have a lot of musicians and a lot of creative and expressive people, and they're finding ways to really support each other in doing that. And
is everybody there sort of like you? I mean, I know that you have a whole other career on the side.
Yeah, no, I'm the backstop, right? And as we did this, it's like, well, even if I fail at this, is it a survivable failure? Right. And yeah, I mean, worst case scenario, I just have to go get another job doing something, you know, 9 to 5 and somewhere away and pay the bills. And if it works well, then that takes some of the pressure to do that off of me. And if it works great, I can be here all the time, and this is all I do. And so everybody else is all in. And
why don't you tell us what the other work that you do is?
So I do green building, but it's like green building for the masses. And so we look at the boutique projects that are very experimental and maybe have a lot of money that's just sort of grants, and nobody really knows for sure if they're going to have legs financially. And we harvest all of the technologies that have true merit and have a marketplace, and then we deploy them to every city block and in. Mostly in the Seattle area, but we do the 80% success story en masse instead of trying to do the 100% success story in one building. And overall, the impact of that is way more substantial. And so that's what we do. And it's a design build contractor. It's in Auburn, and they're absolutely fantastic. It's by far the best job I've ever had. And so.
All right, now we'll go back to the sort of the central theme of our interview, which is really about sort of the intermeshing of all of these things and building local economies.
Absolutely, yeah. So as we realized that our particular business needed to kind of combine affordable housing and combine farming, and neither of them would work great by themselves, but they had a fighting chance if they worked together. Then you look for other opportunities for different businesses to work, to be mutually supportive of each other. And that really got me to thinking, like, could I build an entire retirement portfolio for myself out of businesses that are in the community that I know of, right? Or at least how close can you get? And could you find adequate diversification for your own retirement nest egg in the community that you know? And if these are businesses you get to know and see firsthand, do you have an advantage over some corporation that you may not fully understand what they do, right? As far as knowing whether or not it's a good thing to invest in. And so these were all kind of the idea. When I was doing my MBA a long time ago there was a guy named James Frazier who came in and gave a presentation about what at this time was sort of this wild pitch idea that he was thinking of about a way for people to participate in local investment. And it was Lion at the very, very early stages of Lion.
That's right. James Frazier was like, you know, sort of
here, other. I think he was living.
Well, I think, you know, he's moved away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's Holly now.
But he's one of the founders though of Lion.
So I remember this.
Which
guy
is the Local Investment Opportunities Network for those who don't know.
Right. Yeah. And I remember this guy existed. I couldn't even remember his name, so I called up my professor and was like, hey, who is that guy who came in and talked to me? And once we had possession of the house, I emailed him cold and said, hey, you should come out and meet with me. Come out to the house. I just want to talk to you for a little bit. And that's, of course, by then, Lion was already up and running. They'd founded, I think at that point, maybe $4 million worth of businesses. And it's all the places you know in Port Townsend. You see the winery they just done, the Port Townsend Winery. Finn River was up and running and smoking right along. Mount Townsend Creamery was doing great at the time, and the CoLab, was up and running. I think it paid off all of its debts to its investors, and it's like, wow, they have a lot of success stories. And I did like investor due diligence work as a fellowship program when I was in school for an accredited investor group called Element 8. And they did clean tech, environmentally, and some socially responsible investing. They'd done a couple fairly well-known businesses like Full Circle Farm and Carnation, and a big part of funding that. And I loved the process of working with the investors or potential investors and looking under the hood at these companies and understanding how they work and getting them to a point of being able to decide if they were going to invest in it and how much and negotiating terms and everything else that went with it. I just really missed that whole process. And so I was thrilled to see that there's an opportunity to do it at my scale, which is not, these guys were super well off, and I'm not like that. But there's a a minor leagues that is at an amount that I could be comfortable investing in a, you know, it's not all of Seattle or all of the world, it's Port Townsend. It's a, you know, a space that I could wrap my head around. And
what's the process of becoming a Lion investor?
You ask to be a Lion investor. That's the process.
Who do you ask? Who's in charge?
Lion is really just a collection of people who have an interest in local investment. There's not a board of directors. It's not an organization. There's no, like, it's not an LLC or anything like that. It is literally just people who have their each other's contact information and are interested in local investment. And it's kind of administrated through the Economic Development Council. And so, you know, people can send their information into the EDC and say, I'd like to participate in Lion. Can you make connections for me? And applicants, businesses and entrepreneurs who are looking for funding can do the same thing. Say, I'm looking for funding. Can you connect me with Lion? After that, it's literally an email list. And you get an email saying, hey, there's a business in town or someone who wants to start a business in town. Would you like to learn more about it? And it's not an ask. No one is actively soliciting the public for any kind of funding. It is a chance to understand the web of local businesses in the community. And if you happen to, once you've built those relationships and you know those people and you know the business and the challenges and hardships and triumphs that they're going through, and you find that they're at a hard point of some sort or the next horizon for their business, you can have a discussion with them individually about, hey, you know, I'd like to help. You're a friend, and it would mean a lot to me to see this business thrive.
I guess my question really was, like, you know, how does one get their name put on that email list?
Right. You contact the EDC and say, I'm interested in applying for Lion membership. And the website is through the EDC. You can also find it through the local 2020. And in there is a PDF form that is the simplest application you've ever seen that you can fill out and send to the EDC, and they'll send you a email back saying, hey, we got your application, and we're going to propose your membership to the Lion members, existing Lion members at large. As long as nobody has any objection to you being a part of it, you know, we'll get back to you. And existing members see an application, there's this person, and as long as you are, you know, reputable in the community, you know, and it's highly unusual for anyone to object. We want to get to know each other.
So do you have, like, social gatherings from time to time?
Well, I've been a member since April of last year.
So you haven't had the chance for get-togethers.
I've been to
Zoom meetings.
Yeah, like we had an in-person meeting right before COVID pretty much shut down all of that, and it was at the winery, and it was a fantastic chance to meet everybody. We do a business showcase where some of the businesses who have applied successfully, gotten funding, are giving presentations about, hey, here's how it turned out, here's what we're doing with the money, on track, not on track, you know, all of that kind of stuff, to sort of show people what it looks like after the decision to invest in somebody is made. Drank some wine. I mean, it was a nice social event among people who should all be friends, and it was cool. Since then, it's gone to mostly email in the COVID world, but, you know, hopefully life will return back to those in person.
Speaking with farmer and local investor Eric Peterson, this is Steve Evans for Attention Please and KPTZ Community Radio News.